Non.
Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhi Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so, that was the previous thing. Now we're talking karma and mimamsa. Okay, so this is karma and mimamsa. Then his primary talker was pious deeds. So the Vedas teach religion. That religion is called karma, pious deeds. Rather than the Vedas teach religion, that's sadharma, which is the eternal relationship between the soul and God. Right, so they're taking the activities, the karma itself, right? Because the Vedas, the first means the Samhita is there. You know what we call the Veda? That's the Samhita, where all the verses are. Then you have the subsections, the Brahmanas. So they're telling how to use those verses for doing the various yajnas and that various rituals. So then, according to Purva Mimamsa, is that. That's what it's all about. You're just taking that first section like that. So for them, the Upanishads, all that, they'll use, but they're basically in support of the first two. They don't use it so much for the more esoteric and everything like that, other than just how much esoteric establishes the karma. So he's taking the karma. So Sridhar Swami writes, how should this be understood? It is understood in terms of apurva. He says, first, pious deeds are performed. Then, from these deeds, the apurva, abstract secondary principle, is manifest. Right? So they're taking that my work is the primary, and then my work will produce the results. So then that mechanics that gives me my results, that's secondary. You know, like I go to the store, right? I put down my money, and then somebody from behind the counter gives me the goods. It doesn't matter who it is. The point is I give money, I get goods. Does that make sense? So it doesn't really, I'm not worried about that part. So that's why then this apurva is secondary. That apurva gives the results of the pious deeds. Why is there any need then for a God to give the results of actions? Right, because it's the mechanics. Because even if you saying God is there, but you've done the work, he has to give the results. So the mechanics that he uses to get the results, that's the apurva. So that's what's important. God's not actually important in their idea. Does that make sense? Yeah. Kant and the modern atheists have no power to say anything more outrageous than this. It just means they're not as deviously as smart as Jaimini was. You know, you have to give credit. No one gets less than that. Like that. The Vedanta Sutra propounds only devotion to God. In their commentaries on this book, many atheists preach the Advaita philosophy, impersonalist, which is covered Buddhism. However, to show humankind the right path, the saintly devotees have carefully written the correct commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. Later in this book, we will explain why the Advaita, impersonalist philosophy, is wrong. Right, because we're dealing with all the smaller stuff, because the Advaita is bigger, because it's based on Vedanta. So then you're having to show the proper Vedanta understanding against this improper Vedanta understanding. So there's more detail. These other ones, as we see as you go through, and as you just apply a little bit of logic, and they start to look very strange. Right? So that's why these ones are being dealt with earlier. The Yoga Shastra is also called the Patanjali Shastra. It is written by Patanjali Rishi. In the Sadhana Kanda section of this book is the following sutra. God is a certain person who is untouched by suffering, karma, destiny, or calamity. He knows everything. Because he is untouched by time, he is the master of all. Seeing this description of God, many may think Patanjali is a true devotee of God. However, at the end of Patanjali's book, that mistaken impression is dispelled. In the Kaivalya Pada section of that book, Patanjali writes, "When the goals of life are no more, then liberation, which establishes the soul's original nature or the soul's spiritual potency, is manifest." Right? Because then he's not talking about God. That's the fun part, because he's mentioned this in the Sadhana section, Sadhana Kanda. So that's in the beginning. So I think from what I've heard, that's the second chapter. Then he very much brings up the aspect of God. Yes. Covered Buddhism means impersonalism. The Advaita philosophy of the Vedanta is covered Buddhism. That means, see, Buddha is saying that there is only void, there is nothing, right? And so, but the problem is to get them to accept that, because they were all followers of the Vedas, and they were Karmakandis, you know, following Jaimini, but they had gotten into animal rites, so the killing all the animals. So, you know, so it's not about the power of the mantra. They're not sending the animals to the heavenly planets and that. So nobody's really benefiting. So to stop that, then Buddha came. But now for him to tell them it's ahimsa, those pandits will say no, but the Vedas say these sacrifices are authorized, which they are, but not how they're doing them. Right? So then he says, okay, don't follow the Veda. Right? So then if they don't follow the Vedas, so they have to go something beyond their materialism. So then Veda is talking about the personality of Godhead, devotional service, all this. So then he just talks about nothingness. You know, basically the point is if there's nothingness, you become peaceful. Right? Does that make sense? So then when that goes on for some time, then people are established in that, so they're peaceful. And, you know, they're nonviolent and everything. So now they can come back to the Vedas and again approach the Veda. So Shankaracharya then comes to establish that. Right? He preaches against the Buddhism. But he's preaching against that it's not based on the Vedic Shastra. Right? He's not actually preaching against the philosophy. Right? Because it means you're going from the void that there's nothing, there's no soul, right? It's all illusion that anything's here, there is no individuality. You know, that, you know, he's presenting that, you know, and the Buddhism is the same thing. Buddhism, there's no soul. They'll say, oh, there's soul, but soul means Brahman. So but the concept there's individual souls, that's an illusion. So Buddhism is saying the same thing. So instead of, you know, just disappearing into the void, which means, you know, there is no identity, there is no consciousness, everything, you merge into the Brahman, there is no identity, there is no consciousness. But it sounds better, right? You know, at least it's based on the Vedic principle. So it's something that technically can be done, right? But the point is it's just Buddhism philosophy. So the philosophy is Buddhism, though it's using the Vedas as its, how you say it? Praman is source of evidence. Well, Buddhism is just, they're just making it up. Does that make sense? So then it's now they've accepted the Vedas and in the Vedic process, so now it's a matter of bringing them from that into actually Vaishnavism. Right? So now, bring it back to the actual purpose of the Vedic religion. Does that make sense? So they've gotten rid of that means. So it's done step by step. Does that make sense? You means you have the bogus praman and bogus philosophy. So you keep the bogus philosophy, but you get the proper praman. Right? Then the next thing is to bring the bogus philosophy into real philosophy. Does that make sense? Like that, yeah. Yes.
Lately, there's been some translations by Gaudiya Vaishnava authors on the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, and I think they're trying to explain it in devotional terms. I mean, but we see here Purushartha Shunyanam, that the conclusion is shunya, is voidness.
Yeah.
So is that...
See, is that these great personalities, because you're dealing with two aspects here. One is they are the persons who are supposed to write these things, because there's these kind of mentalities. You basically have these six kind of mentalities. So then, it's not that they themselves are not realized of what's proper, but it's their business to present this, just like Shankara as Lord Shiva, he's the greatest Vaishnava. But he presents only parts of the philosophy so you can come to the wrong conclusion. So then they also do the same thing.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So they're being doing this as the serve because people want to be misled. So at least if they're being misled, there should be a concept of Shastra and Guru and a process of sadhana, you know, and everything like that. So that in other words, if you can correct the philosophy, then a karma mimamsa, he wouldn't have so much problem following Vaishnava religion.
Right.
Yes. Because he already has the lifestyle, guru, shastra, regulation, everything like that, sacrifice, nice karma. You know, he already has all those elements. So then it's just a matter of adding the proper philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So that's what they're trying to do.
So at a certain point, you would say that they've graduated beyond what this book has to offer, and then you bring in the other shastras like Gita and Bhagavatam.
Yes. Yes. So the point is you can also, this means just kind of like what Ramanuja does, you take what's their philosophy and redefine. Mm-hmm. Means they're giving definitions, but their definitions aren't correct. They're based on shastra, but their conclusions, how they do it, aren't correct. You know, or part of it's correct. So it's not full information. So they're giving the full information, like these Vaishnava scholars. So you could define it that way. But you have to be very, very careful, because then people not being able to discriminate might then think the Yoga Sutras are. So if they're not reading a Vaishnava commentary, then they'll commit themselves too much to it. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is in there, you can bring it out, but what sections they'll bring out? The ones about the Lord, how the functioning of the mind, these kind of things like that. But all on the sadhana, you can bring it back. You can do it, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, someone may easily get lost in the process. They're just like in Mahabharata, people get lost, you know? You know what I'm saying? So one quarter is actually directly devotional, three quarters is not. People get lost. So how much of the Patanjali Sutras is like directly devotional and how much is not? So there's the chance of getting lost in it. So if you're preaching to the yogis and all, that's good to bring them to the proper path like that. But that wouldn't be our specific interest in study. You know what I'm saying? But it could be when they define it's like this, you say, well, actually, it's like that. So that's also can be a way if you want to preach to the yogis and that, you know, people who know that the sutras, then it's nice, or people who have interest. But even much of the time, just from our own literature, without that, you can do. You know, so it means if you can use it, nice, but it's not, how you say, it wouldn't be important for general reading. It's very specific. Is that, yeah. You know, it's just like Maya. Maya is a devotee of the Lord, but at the same time, it's because we're committed to it and how we are seeing and this and that. So then we can call it the witch Maya. You know what I'm saying? So you have these two aspects. So in here, then you're dealing with that part that's what's not correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So here is that, okay, the soul's spiritual potency is manifest, is original nature. So you can say goals of, when the goals of life are no more, it means no material goals, then liberation, which establishes the soul's nature as a servant of the Lord, and that is manifest. So you could take up at that point from the yoga process, because Krishna mentions the yogi as, as means that they're following two aspects of the same path. But the advantage is the devotee is already, where the yogi comes to after great effort, the devotee already starts there. So they both end up at the same place, but it's just so much easier to directly take the path of bhakti than indirectly. Is that? Yeah? Okay. Right, because here he doesn't mention about God. So that's the point, is that's what he's saying. God is a certain person, untouched. He is the master of all, right? He is beyond. But the point is he doesn't say, when goals of life are no more than liberation, which established the soul original nature in contact with the Lord. He doesn't mention that. So that's the problem, is in the beginning he talks about it.
Yeah.
They meditate upon the Lord, right? So they'll be inspired, but at the end there's no discussion about it.
I think that's one of the very aspects of Yama, is Ishvara Pranidhan. Surrender to the Lord.
Okay.
So right at the very beginning.
Yeah. So so that's the difficulty, is that it's not later, it doesn't give that same emphasis. You know, because he kind of leaves it open. It means if you're smart, you'll remember that it was the Lord that you're meditating on. He's the supreme goal, the master of all and above everyone. So when you get to the end, you'll have that same mood and surrender. You'll carry that all the way through. All right. But if not, you'll have forgotten by then, and then you'll be happy in your, you know, whatever state you get yourself to. You know, does that make sense? You know, North Queensland or Louisiana, you know, whichever one, you know, the one you end up in. Right? Okay, in the Bhojavriti, the sutra is explained in these words. When the soul no longer has form, then it is situated in its spiritual essence. That is called kaivalya, liberation. This means when the spiritual potency is situated in its own nature, that is called kaivalya, liberation. Because right, that's what he's saying, the kaivalya part. In this passage, what is the meaning of the phrase liberation of the spiritual potency? Does it mean here that when he attains liberation, the individual soul no longer performs any action? Does it mean that after he attains liberation, the individual soul continues to have a relation with God? Unfortunately, this Yoga Shastra book does not answer these questions. After again and again reading this book, one will become convinced that the God described in the Sadhana Kanda section is considered only an imaginary being created to help attain spiritual perfection, right? Like the smartas do. Right? Because you can't meditate on nothing, so you meditate on something. So you meditate on something in the mode of goodness. Right? So they imagine a temporary form of the Lord. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it sounds from this that it doesn't state it explicitly. It's kind of.
It doesn't state it explicitly, so therefore, since it doesn't state it explicitly, then following in the footsteps of Narad Muni, we would take it that it's not so useful.
Right.
Right? Like Mahabharata on its own is not very useful. Mm. Mahabharata with the Bhagavatam understanding then becomes useful. Right? So in other words, the Patanjali Sutras on their own, by reading them, one will not get an understanding of God consciousness. But if you're God conscious, then by reading them, then it may give so many of the mechanics, you know, mental mechanics that are there. Yes.
If you are God conscious, wouldn't other literatures be better anyway?
Yes, naturally. So that's what I'm saying. Unless it's something that you want to specialize in dealing with yoga or that philosophical area, then you get into it. Otherwise, it's not important. Just like, you know, if you're not a cook, will you read cookbooks?
Some people do, but I wouldn't.
they should probably outlaw, you know, all the pictures, right? That's the worst part. Pictures. Okay. So, unfortunately, this Yoga Shastra book does not answer these questions. It doesn't answer the questions. The Vaishnava commentators, they can answer the questions, but the book doesn't. Right? Does that make sense? Just like Mahabharata tells about the Pandavas and the Arjuna and everybody, and refer to Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they don't explicitly tell you to surrender to him and that. It's just that Pandavas are doing that, so naturally you would also do that.
Right.
You know? But that's the point. So the Bhagavatam directly says that. Then you can actually catch the point.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's the problem. It's not the Yoga Sutras don't directly say this is what's going on. So because of that, they don't actually answer the question. The book itself doesn't answer the question. You know what I'm saying? So if devotees can write a commentary, great. But that doesn't mean the book itself answers the questions. You know, the Bhagavatam answers the questions. Then we can elaborate on how to follow those or understand and apply them in our life. So there's a difference there. Right? Okay. Okay. And after the soul attains perfection, the idea of God is no longer taken seriously. Right? Because otherwise, why wouldn't they get more serious in the conversation? Now you're seeing God face to face. Well, not exactly face to face. In the first level, he's not face to face. But it's the meditation on the Lord is full. It's complete. Right? The lower level. You know, so if it's taken up in devotion, then that will start to develop shantaras. And then when he goes further into seeing face to face, then that's even more. But here, once they get to there, then that would be the perfect time to now talk about that, but then they don't. So therefore, it's like God's not taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And is this book theistic or atheistic? You give the answer. Right? And the point is, how is it theistic? Because it's not talking about God. Right? Theistic means it establishes the eternal form of the Lord and the eternal relationship between the soul and God. Right? That's theistic. So it's not doing that. You know, it leaves the door open that someone else could do that, but it doesn't do it itself. So the book itself is not.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, like you have a car. Is the car spiritual? No, but devotees can use it. It how it was made, it wasn't necessarily intended. But it's not that when the manufacturer made the car, you know, and you go down to the dealer and all that, and you sit down and, okay, fill out the forms and all that, and they say, you know, occupation or use of the car, just, you know, for the information. You say, you know, for the temple, for, you know, religious purposes. And they say, oh, I'm sorry, we can't sell it to you. This car was designed. It was not for use in, you know, spiritual things. You can't use it that way. You know what I'm saying? So it's open. So like that. So like that, then Patanjali Sutras are open.
So it's not atheistic.
It's open, yeah.
Means it's just open, so yeah. Which means atheistic.
Okay.
You understand? If you're not theistic, technically okay. You're atheistic. Because there is only theistic.
Yeah.
Right? So theistic means the soul is the eternal servant of God. God has an eternal form. If you're not actually saying that, then it's not. That's theistic, so it's not theistic.
Yeah.
So it's atheistic. You understand? But they're open. Generally, yogis are fairly open, unless they take Shankara's commentary. So that's very common. You have yogis who follow the Shankara Vedanta as far as philosophy goes, and they use yoga just as their means of meditation or peacefulness or, you know, health or whatever it is that they're trying to do. That would be more of a difficulty. But if they're pure just on the Patanjali Sutras, then you could discuss and bring out God consciousness. But much of the time, that may not be of interest.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, they're just into whatever it is they're into.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Pilates.
Hmm?
Pilates.
Pilates.
Exercise. Oh, I was thinking pretzels.
Yeah.
So next life they end up in Germany, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So like that. So. In the different countries and in different languages, the philosophy of atheism has been preached in many ways and called by many different names. Riti. The six schools of thoughts can thus be considered both atheistic and Mayavadi. Their philosophies were illusory and their actions were in the service of deluding illusory energy. four of them, Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Shankya, and Shankara's Vedanta, categorically deny the existence of God. The remaining two, Karmamsa and Patanjali's Yoga, accept the concept of a supreme Lord, yet deny his independence and transcendence. As time wore on, each doctrine saw its own star fade and strove to outshine the others, but to no avail. Shankara orchestrated an ingenious deception, and extracting the impersonalistic ideas from each, synthesized them all into his Mayavad hypothesis. As they were all atheistic anyway, it was not difficult for him to incorporate their ideas into his own. So from Vaishnava Vijay. So it should be clearly understood and appreciated that Srila Vyasadeva, with great care and attention, precisely and concisely constructed his Vedanta Sutra in such a way as to be the blueprint for future generations for all times in regards to the correct interpretations of the six philosophies in a way which is not contradictory but harmonious with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Right? So here's the principle. It's actually started by Vyasadeva himself. 38.1. We don't even get it. So that means it's 38.2. Okay, but not 38.5 and 38.7 and a half.
Somebody didn't clean out their locker.
No, I think it's a drama.
Yeah.
It's definitely a drama.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is there a script for this? Okay. So, precisely, concisely construct his Vedanta Sutra in such a way as to be the blueprint for future generations for all times, in regards to the correct interpretation of the six philosophies, right? In a way which is not contradictory, but harmonious with the Supreme Absolute Truth. So, in other words, if you take that and interpret each one of those fully in line with Vedanta, right, then that's fine. So you're doing like that, but then that should be a process like that. So you're trying to see how each one of those, because they're all parts, as we said before, parts of the Vaishnava philosophy. But they've taken a certain part and try to make that complete in itself. So that's going to be a weakness. Does that make sense? So it can be interpreted, but in the form that it's originally given, it's not. But therefore, the Vedanta Sutra, because the Vedanta Sutra deals with all six philosophies. Like that. I'm not even sure Jaimini is not one of the first ones he deals with. I think even in the first chapter, he's already talking about Jaimini. Like that. So it's just, you know, that's what he does. He deals with each one of them, shows what's the proper position. Okay. This history is related by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Lord Chaitanya met with the sannyasis of Varanasi, Prakashananda Saraswati addressed the assembly as follows. After studying the six philosophical theses, Vyasadeva completely summarized them all in the aphorisms of Vedanta philosophy. Of the philosophies mentioned, none really cares for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. They are always busy refuting the philosophical theories of others and establishing their own. So they're very busy trying to establish their own philosophy, but they're not really concerned about the Supreme Lord. It's more about making their philosophy prominent. By studying the six philosophical theories, one cannot reach the absolute truth, right? Because they on their own aren't giving the absolute truth. It is therefore our duty to follow the path of the Mahajanas, the authorities. Whatever they say should be accepted as the supreme truth. C.C. Madhya Lila, 25:53-56. Right? So studying those is not going to get you the absolute truth, right? Because they're only parts. They're not designed to bring out the personality of Godhead. So the study of these means we're studying these to see them actually how they connect to the absolute truth. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It seems that these six philosophies were written before the Vedanta Sutra.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because they're all there before. They're all disciples of Vyasadeva. That's the fun part.
Yes. Also, technically, they're eternal. So.
Yeah, they're eternal. So that means that the philosophy is already there, but then somebody has to write it down. Right? So Vyasadeva is not going to write it down. Right? He's writing down, you know, the other Vedic literatures, compiling the Vedic literatures. But these are interpretations. So they're always there. So then you know, they're the ones that write it down. So every Kali Yuga, they're being written down. So 1,000 times in the day of Brahma, they're being written down. Right?
As a master, he must be able to defeat his disciple.
Yeah, but that's the Vedanta Sutra. So that there, yes. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse. In his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya, commentary on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the following summary of the six philosophical processes. Prakashananda admitted that Sripad Shankaracharya, being very eager to establish his philosophy of monism, took shelter of the Vedanta philosophy and tried to explain it in his own way. The fact is, however, that if one accepts the existence of God, one certainly cannot establish the theory of monism. For this reason, Shankaracharya refuted all kinds of Vedic literature that establishes the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. Right? So, in other words, you're accepting the Vedic literature, but you have to defeat all the verses that actually prove the personality of Godhead. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that's why he didn't even go near the Bhagavatam. Right? It's just he used other literatures that it's easier, that you can juggle, the Upanishads and other things like this. In various ways, Shankaracharya has tried to refute the Vedic literature. Throughout the world, 99% of the philosophers following in the footsteps of Shankaracharya refuse to accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead, they try to establish their own opinions. It is typical of mundane philosophers to want to establish their own opinions and refute those of others. Okay, in the Mahabharata, Vanaparva, 313-117, Yudhishthira Maharaj says the following. Dry arguments are inconclusive. A great personality whose opinion does not differ from others is not considered a great sage. Simply by studying the Vedas, which are variegated, one cannot come to the right path by which religious principles are understood. The solid truth of religious principles is hidden in the heart of an unadulterated self-realized soul. Consequently, as the Shastras confirm, one should accept whatever progressive path the Mahajanas advocate. Okay. Therefore, 1, Mimamsa philosophers following the principle of Jaimini stress fruitive activity and say if there is a God, he must be under the laws of fruitive activity. In other words, if one performs his duties very nicely in the material world, God is obliged to give one the desired result. According to these philosophers, there's no need to become a devotee of God. One strictly follows moral principles, one will be recognized by the Lord, who will give the desired reward. Right? So it's not about his grace. Mm-hmm. It's just you do the right work, you get the right results. That's all. You fill out the form, the work does. You don't fill out the form, they don't do any work for you. You know, it's.
All right. That enlightens how the Western world is so worried about, you know, academia, and because they think that if you don't actually fill those positions, you won't get the results. But if you do fill it, automatically will come.
Yeah, automatically, that's it, right? It means, so what is it, that 40%, you have to always keep very much in mind that 40% unemployment that they have, that's not one of them. I mean, you know, it's so clear cut, without exception. It's just like, you know, a bright shining light on the horizon, that there's not one person with a degree, academic degree, that doesn't have a job. And all that 40% are all the ones that don't have the degree. Right? Isn't that the way it is? No. I mean, it's just as many. There's probably more people without degrees that have jobs than percentage than there are those ones that, like that, because you know, they're willing to do anything. While the other guy, you know, he can only, you know, do one particular thing. While the other guy can do anything. He can drive a truck, take out the garbage, flip burgers. You know, he's a wide variety of things. You know, but this other guy, he can only sit there, you know, and do certain very things. He can read 20 books and give you a shallow understanding of all of them, you know, and do all that within a few weeks. Right? You know, I mean, very, very important, you know, necessity in human society. Right? Isn't it? Definitely going to get a job for that. So that's the illusion that if you have the degree, then automatically you have a position, you have money, you're successful. No one taught you how to manage the money, right? No one taught you how to invest it, what to buy. You know what I'm saying? So like that, these are the kind of things. These, who does? It's just like, means one of the locals from here, they go to the West, they make a little money, right? What do? They come back here, buy land, build a house. They own the land, they own the house, right? And then by staying there a little longer, you know, as they're building the house, they get more money, they buy land and build a house or buy a house over there. So they own two properties, right? But the Westerners, they go, they do the same thing, get some money, come over here and rent. You know, you come back 10 years later, they still have nothing. Right? But after 10 years, you know, the local, he has two places. You know. And this is not an exaggeration. This is pretty standard.
He's building more stories on him.
Yeah, he's building more stories. So that's the thing, is that these others, they all have the degree, but it didn't tell them how to work with that. They learned that from being practical, you know. You know, what's the view, what's the this, what's your life, what's the value in your life? Therefore, they do this. And generally, the tendency is, most anywhere other than the first world, they tend to do that. Means, if you get something, invest it. But the first world is get it, enjoy it. You know? Does that make sense? I mean, it doesn't make sense, but that's what they do.
There was a job for sweepers, for street cleaners, and there were a few PhDs in São Paulo.
Yeah, no.
Set. Looking for it.
Yeah, in Assam, I don't know now, but I remember back in the, this is one of those stupid ones. Yeah, back in the 70s. Just the other day, right? You know, back in the 70s. I got in a rickshaw, you know, and started saying, and the guy, you know, was dressed nicely, spoke nice English, you know, very gentle and cultured, very clean. And I got talking about it, you know, how is it like that? There was a law at that time in Assam that only those with bachelors could drive rickshaws. Because there were so many people with bachelors and no jobs, so they made it that only they can drive the rickshaws. That's exclusively for them.
So you can have a nice conversation on your way to your
testimony. Yeah, yeah, of course. You know, they tried to increase the standard. You know, so if the bachelors are that, you know, what are the PhDs? Yeah, they're the guys behind the counter. They're the guys that carry the bags out of the rickshaw when you get to the hotel. Yeah, and the guy who owns the hotel, he has no degree. Yeah, that's the...
While they were getting their education, he was building...
Yeah, I mean, for the same amount of money, he took all that money that he took to get educated. He could have bought himself a house and then gone to the next city or next state and drove a rickshaw. Right? You know, he wouldn't need the degree, you know, so he already has money. And, you know, he gets that money, so he'd be doing pretty well. Such philosophers do not accept the Vedic principle of bhakti yoga. Instead, they give stress to following one's prescribed duty. Right? So it's sattvic. It's a good, it's a nice thing. It's pious. But they're thinking that by doing that, I'll get all perfection, because perfection is just having facility, enjoying yourself. Rather than, I don't belong here, the soul is different from the body, different from the material world, and so I need to go to the spiritual. Because they recognize the soul, all the six philosophies recognize the soul. Otherwise, how do you continue on and become perfect in their system? Right? But they don't see that bhakti is important, because I do my good work, God has to give the results, rather than I have to please him, and then he'll give the good results. right? And then, if I'm going to please him and he could give devotion, why would I ask for material results? Right? You know, probably get, you don't go to a millionaire and ask for 10 paisa, right? Like that.
We have our concept of daiva, varnashram dharma. Would this be considered asuric, varnashram dharma?
Basically. Asuric just means it's not, its goal is not to the Supreme Lord, to know the Lord. Daiva varnashram means you're following the varnashram system of the idea of perfecting your life by developing love for God. So it's the same system. It's just that one is very dry and one's nice. That's all. But it's exactly the same rules. It's not that the asuric varnashram. It's just like, what's the difference between a grihastha and a grihamedi? Yeah, grihastha has a better house, grihamedi has a bad house or something. No, it's the same thing. Mechanics are exactly the same. Grihastha means God's the center of the house. You know, and everything in the house revolves around God. Grihamedi means the house is the center and everything around. Even God. It doesn't mean you can't be God conscious, just God's around that. You know, it's the house is what's important.
God's in the cupboard.
God's in the cupboard, yeah. Like that. Yeah, I've even seen God in the cupboard. It's not an uncommon thing. He's in the cupboard. You open it up, the whole thing, puja, everything, and then when the dhan closes. Yeah. Okay, two. Atheistic Shankya philosophers like Kapila, right? So he's not saying like, because there's a whole slew of them. Right, but he's like the best of them. You know, just like he said, is that you know the things that Jaimini will come up with, he's the best. You know, even Kant can't come up with, and all these other guys, they won't come up with such good points. You know, totally just outrageous. They can't. You have to be really dynamic to be able to think of something so outrageous. Right? So now, two atheistic Shankya philosophers like Kapila analyze the material elements very scrutinizingly, and thereby come to the conclusion that material nature is the cause of everything. They do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the cause of all causes. Because remember, in Shankya there, the atheistic, they only go up to Pradhan. That's where it ends. So Pradhan is where it starts, and getting back to Pradhan is the perfection. Right? It's because of interest or that desire to know oneself, you know, on the material platform, that there's creation. And then once you understand the difference and everything and who you actually are, then the Pradhan merges back into it, you know, just goes back into itself. Mm-hmm. Of just all the elements go back into the homogeneous Pradhan. So they don't know where excuse me, they don't know where Pradhan has come from. Mm-hmm. So that's not important to them. Right? So they're because the other ones are atheistic, but we don't call them atheists specifically in general discussion, because there is some aspect of God could be there, you know, or God is there, but it's not so relevant to what you're discussing, right? But here he specifically says it ends at Pradhan. Starts at Pradhan, expands, you know, in all the different things how we'll say the creation is, and then goes back. So from Pradhan down, and from where ones are back to Pradhan, basically the philosophy is the same. Right? Shankya is Shankya. But the atheistic means it doesn't go beyond that. It didn't start before with Narayan. And it doesn't end with Narayan. So that's the... Okay. So here, it doesn't accept the personality of God as the cause of all causes, right? The other one is that, you know, he just does what I say. I do the good work, and he gives me the results. So he's not, you don't have, even if he is the Supreme or not, it doesn't matter, because it's my work that is important, and he's giving that. So there's no you need to worship him. And here is that he just doesn't exist. Right? You know, he's not the cause of everything. Three, Nyaya philosophers like Gotama and Kanada have accepted a combination of atoms as the original cause of the creation. Right, so therefore, if you analyze very nicely all these atoms and combinations of the atoms, then you understand the difference between you and these atoms, and then you're able to get out. Right? Does that make sense? Just wondering if that means then one should study the Adams family. In that way. That, with that you can very nicely understand that you're not that.
They have an it, though, right?
They have an it, yeah. But the problem is if you think you're that, then you have a problem. Mayavadi philosophers say that everything is an illusion. Headed by philosophers like Ashtavakra, they stress the impersonal Brahman, effulgence, as the cause of everything. So here there's something beyond the creation, but it's, you know, beyond matter, but it's just Brahman. Right? So he's saying, so it's headed by Ashtavakra. So this is where it was, that Shankara then, you know, is the most popular. But Ashtavakra and these ones, they were originally talking about it. So in other words, that Mayavad concept was already there. He just put it together in the particular form he did, which is basically kind of like Buddhism. Right? Yes.
Is Ashtavakra is a philosopher with body was...
Yeah, bent in eight places, yes. Yeah. No, he was very... It means he became famous when he was small. He was a young kid. Like that. So he went and defeated the court pundit. See, his father was there and he went off to the court to discuss. They were calling all these pundits to discuss. But whoever went there never came back. So then he got, you know, a little suspicious of that. So then he went there. And then, you know, found out that whoever this pundit defeated, they would drown them in the ocean. Right? So then he went there with the point that I'll defeat him and we'll have him drown in the ocean. So he did defeat him and he was thrown into the ocean. But then it was revealed that he was one of the servants of Varuna. And that all the pundits who they were calling were all the, you know, the best pundits and priests. Because Varuna was doing a big sacrifice and he needed Brahmins. So they were put into the ocean. And, you know, as soon as they're thrown into the ocean, then Varuna's men are there to greet them and take them and everything. So nobody drowned. And so then at that time, then they all come back. So that's Ashtavakra. But where's God, right? It doesn't come out. Just, you know, if you're good logician and things like that. Five, philosophers following the precepts of Patanjali practice Raja Yoga. They imagine a form of the absolute truth of many forms. That is the process of self-realization. All five of these philosophies completely reject the predominance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and have strived to establish their own philosophical theories. However, Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra and, taking the essence of all Vedic literature, established the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so, in other words, here we're taking the six philosophies, meaning the philosophy of Vyasa as the sixth, which is bona fide, the other five that are not. So then Gotama and Kanada, then they're put together because it's basically the same philosophy. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Like that. But, or if you're talking, so sometimes you see it as about the six philosophies, means one bona fide, five bogus. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you see him talking about the six bogus philosophies. That means they don't combine Gotama and Kanada and Shankara with Vedanta. It's the bogus Vedanta interpretation. Then there's Vyasas, right? So there's six bogus, and then there's Vyas, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So otherwise, sometimes this, but it always comes out as six.
Yeah, I've come across the seven bogus Vedic philosophies. They include Charaka.
Yeah, they can do that also. Because he's not actually Vedic. Uh-huh. That's why he's not counted within the six.
Yeah.
But he lived within the Vedic culture. Mm. But he's not based, and he may use it, but he's not actually Vedic philosophy. Because it's just, he's not accepting anything other than... There is no Praman. To be Vedic, you have to accept the Praman of the Vedas. Mm-hmm. But he only believes in Pratyaksha, what the senses can gain.
Right.
Right. So that's why they gave that joke about goofing on him, that if his wife is pregnant, it's not his child, that he can't use Anuman to say that somebody else did it. Right? Because it's only Pratyaksha. He didn't see it happen. It didn't happen. His wife's not pregnant. It's just the way it is.
Right. Do we also see the six Vaishnava or Vedic Vedanta philosophy.
It means you have that, but one of them Shankara.
Yes.
So you have five like that. Yeah. So yeah, it's just, these are all the different ways that they're combined together for study. All five of these philosophies completely reject the predominance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the point, the predominance. Mm-hmm. It's some, because otherwise when we're studying Nyaya, they accept that there's a Supreme God. Yeah. And he's the creator, the maintainer, destroyer, you know, all these different things. They do accept that, but he's not predominant. It's nothing to do with the perfection. Perfection is not establishing your relationship with him. So that means they're not, it's atheistic in that it's not actually accepting the real position of the God and soul. Right? Because if there's some aspect of Krishna you don't accept, that's atheistic, because he is that. Does that make sense? Right, yeah.
Yeah, it just occurred to me, that's why Bhagavatam begins with, when he says Janbalyasyata, he also says Abhigyas Svarat. Svarat means independent. So that's directly addressing, you know, the point of the Karma Mimamsa philosophy.
Yes, yes, because otherwise he's saying is, no, he has to do what, you know, he has to give me the results. Yes. No, but he's independent. He doesn't have to give.
Yeah.
But he may give because it'll keep you busy, but it's his independent choice to do that.
Right.
Okay. Okay. They completely reject the predominance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and strive to establish their own philosophical theories, right? Because their theories are more important than the relationship with God and the relationship with him. Does that make sense? So in other words, their philosophy, their process is more important than the goal of establishing a relationship with God. That's why then it's improper. However, Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra, and taking the essence of all Vedic literature, establish the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All five kinds of philosophers mentioned above understand that impersonal Brahman is without material qualities. And they believe that when the Personality of Godhead appears, he is contaminated and covered by the material qualities. Right? So even if they're talking about then their appearance, so that Supreme then will be in the form of Brahman, some aspect of that. And so if he appears, then I'll always be in the mode of goodness. The technical term used is saguna. They speak of saguna Brahman and nirguna Brahman. For them, nirguna Brahman means the impersonal absolute truth without any material qualities. And saguna Brahman means the absolute truth that accepts the contamination of material qualities. Right, so that we can see is that that aspect, though is a prominent element in Shankara's philosophy, doesn't come from Shankara. Because the other five, they're talking about that. Yes. So as it mentions, he got all these things from him. Because otherwise, what are you going to put together? Right? Vedanta is already there. These other philosophies are there. You know, so it's going to be harder. It means Vedanta can defeat the other one, so it's better to take that position. But the bogus arguments is Vedanta doesn't have any. So you're going to have to take the bogus arguments from the other five and then try to use the Vedantic method to prove them. Does that make sense? So this way then you come up with a philosophy. So it wasn't just, what do you call it? You know, haphazard. Because otherwise what is it going to be? There's proper philosophy, bogus philosophy. So bogus is given by these five. So therefore, take their philosophy, but present it according to Vedanta. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Then it'll be a stronger position, yes.
To which degree these different schools are visible nowadays? Followers?
It depends. If you know where to look, then you can find, just like, you know, most people don't see salamanders. You know where to look, you can find them. You know which rock to look under, they're there. Right? So there's tons of them. The smartest, there's tons of them. Impersonalists, they're all over the place. Like that. But you have to go to certain places, like Varanasi or that, to find the Nyayists, you know, or the like that. So these other smaller schools are much less. You know? But Yoga, Karma Mimamsa, Shankara Vedanta, these are quite prominent. But the other three are a little bit less. But everybody knows Nyaya, they all use it. Okay. No sense. More or less, this kind of philosophical speculation is called Mayavad philosophy, right? Because the point is the Lord, when he takes a form, that's Maya. So technically, you could say they're all Mayavadis. So therefore, when we talk about bogus philosophy, we say Mayavadis. You know, it works, because they technically are all Mayavadis, but they won't necessarily identify themselves with the Mayavadis. Right, but the Mayavadis do identify themselves with the Mayavadis, right? Because it's all Maya. That's their thing. The other one is that there's other aspects, and then there's like that. Right. That's why it said a devotee is one who accepts the eternal form of the Lord, because all the non-devotees, they don't accept the eternal form of the Lord. So whether they're philosophically inclined or not, right? Does that make sense? The fact is, however, that the absolute truth never has anything to do with material qualities, because he is transcendental. He is always complete with full spiritual qualities. The five philosophers mentioned above do not accept Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? But they are very busy refuting the philosophies of other schools. The Krishna consciousness movement is propagating the philosophical conclusions of Srila Vyasadeva and following other great acharyas like Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, Vishnuswami, Nimbarka, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyaliya 2556 purport. That's why we're not into the elements of, you know, well, this school, you know, Ramanuja says that, Madhva says that, there's a fight here, what's the thing, who's right? It's not a matter of that. All it is they're bringing out different aspects that are useful for different presentations. Does that make sense? So therefore we follow them. So depending upon what situation, you bring out that aspect.
So these are our Mahajans that Prabhupada is referring
to? Yes. Yes, the great, these are the Mahajans.
Try to fight between the false philosophy and the real philosophy.
The?
It seems like
false and the real.
Yes.
But you said fool's philosophy.
Huh?
But you said fool's philosophy.
Philosophy, yes. No, but technically you can say it's a fight between the five bogus philosophies, which one of them is the supreme bogus philosophy. Like that. And so let them fight it out. Whoever wins, then we'll discuss with them. No, why get involved? Because they're each trying to establish themselves. Because that's the thing. We don't have to establish this, because it is correct.
Yeah.
Is people don't understand. But they're trying to say, no, the other one's bogus. This is the thing. So people say, we're doing the same thing. No, we're just presenting what's the truth. They're not worried about the personality of Godhead and trying to establish their philosophy. We're worried about the personality of Godhead. So therefore, the philosophy, you know, backs that up. Yes?
Would it be correct to say that Shankara defeated those five previous bogus ones, so we only have to defeat him as a result?
Kind of. Yeah, but because he already included those philosophies in his.
Right.
So then he put together the supreme bogus philosophy.
The winner.
Yeah, the winner, yeah. Yeah, because basically, like you said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, 99%.
Yes.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yeah, 99%. And that was 150 years ago. Like that.
Yeah.
You know, that was when philosophy meant something, you know, so then they were all bogus, right? Okay. 38.2, so 38.39. 38.2.1.
We
want to add some more material later. Okay, just add it in, 32.1.2. Okay, text 18. Mixed with karma, fruit of activities, and jnana, philosophical speculation, material logic places a great variety of ideas in human society. Thus, logic brings many material results in this world of birth and death. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Logic, yukti, is of two kinds, pure, shuddha, and mixed, misra. Pure logic is present in the spirit soul in its original pure nature. When this spirit soul... When the spirit soul is imprisoned in matter, and his activities are mixed with material conceptions. Then he possesses what I call mixed logic, Misra Yukti. This mixed logic is of two kinds, mixed with fruit of action, Karma Misra, and mixed with philosophical speculation, Jnana Misra. Right? So here this Karma Misra, Jnana Misra are used in many, many ways. Right? So meaning that means here you're saying pure logic is mixed with this. Or you're saying pure devotion is mixed with this. Right? This mixed logic is also known by the word tarka, material speculation. Is that tarka just means argument. That's all. Tarka does not mean, siddhanta means you're trying to, you have a conclusion, you're trying to understand that. Tarka means you just argue. Right? But it's speculative. You don't have really a siddhanta. Means you may call it a siddhanta, but it's not exactly. This mixed logic is very bad. For seen within it are the four defects, brahma, mistakes, pramada, illusions, vipralipsa, cheating, and karanapatava, sensory inefficiency. The conclusions attained by this mixed logic are always faulty. Pure logic always arrives at the same conclusions. Mixed logic arrives at a great host of mutually contradictory conclusions, right? Means it in itself contradicts itself.
Yeah.
By acting according to the conclusions of mixed logic, the souls in the material world attain the result of being more and more stringently confined in the prison of the material world. Right? Because you become more and more absorbed. So they're giving, by their so-called logic, and that they're giving more and more options for enjoying the world. You know, so I think Prabhupada, one purport is discussing philosophy, and is all this Mayavad, you know, philosophy. Then that's the cause of so much absorption and sense gratification, because it brings out so much speculation. Because the principle, if there's conclusion, then this is what should be done. But if there's speculation, then that means there's speculation in what I should also do. You understand? Right? If it's like, here are your duties, this is what you do, there's no speculation, then one performs the proper activities. But if it's a matter in the philosophy, you can speculate. Why you won't speculate then on the material platform, that I tried to enjoy this way, it didn't give me the good result, so I speculate what are other ways I could put it together to enjoy. Right? And so this way it just increases enjoyment. Right? Because your culture is supposed to be based on your philosophy. So your culture is speculative, that means your culture will be speculative. So every means there's more varieties of ways to enjoy, and there's more changes than just how the form of the culture is. So it's not fixed, it's not stable. Right. Text 19. By employing the logic that is born from matter, one cannot go above matter. Material logic speaks only nonsense. Because they're using matter as your elements, so you can't go beyond that. While in transcendental, you're talking about, you're discussing transcendence. And we're giving example of here in the material world of ways that we can relate to how it connects to the transcendence. Mixed logic is a commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Mixed logic is born from matter. Looking through the door of the senses, the soul, imprisoned in matter, catches a glimpse of material images. A glimpse carried by the nerves to the brain. I guess that's kind of like why it's popular. You sit at the window and look out the window. You know, it's in your rocking chair and watch everything go by. It's actually what the soul is doing.
Yeah.
It's just, you know. Okay. Okay. The soul imprisoned in matter catches a glimpse of material images, a glimpse carried by the nerves to the brain. There the images are preserved by the power of memory. It is then that material logic does its work. Because then you apply all these things onto it. That's where the speculation comes. It means what's coming in through the door, through the senses, going through the nerves, going to the brain. There's so many things that the mind reduces that down to something, because the mind can only work with one thing at a time. right? Once it's worked it down, it goes into the memory, so now you access the intelligence. Now the speculation starts. Right? What are all the different things? And then depending upon all the speculations you come up, then you go to the next stage where through the false ego, it will choose one that properly matches your own identity. Right? And then things will go back out from the brain down through the nerves and out through the door. Like that.
This process of five is basically taken from Sankhya, the reflectionism theory?
I'm not sure. Bhaktivinoda Thakur always talks about it.
Yeah, I've seen it before.
Yeah, but sometimes he mentions the point about the mind intelligence of false ego, and sometimes he doesn't. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's the same thing. It just gives more detail. But then sometimes by giving that, people get confused because it's the mind is doing all these, but at the same time it's mind, intelligence, false ego,
right.
Like that. And then you know it's first senses mind, and then the last one is mind senses, right? So it's that five stages. The reflectionism is there, but also is that we mentioned the other days because that came up with. No, that's not Das Ramadas. Forget his name. The devotee who came, he had the hat? Huh? Mathura. That's it, Mathura. Because he had back in the 80s, and he and Das Ramadas, they were working on our music curriculum and all that. So then, you know, so he wanted to know how it worked. And so that reflectionism is there, that potency of that chit potency of the soul is reflecting onto the intelligence. Right? Because that's the central point that the mind is accessing this, it's the senses, and then it accesses the intelligence. So the intelligence is the one that reflects, because the senses are managed mechanically by the intelligence. What you'll be doing with them, that's managed by the mind. You know, it's just like the guy in the back seat. He's telling the car where to go, but there's actually a driver there. So that driver, that's the intelligence. And the mind is then saying, you know, what's important and all that. So it's the intelligence, the chit potency of the soul reflecting off the intelligence, that it goes through the senses and reflects onto, to gives illumination to whatever's the particular sense object. Then the intelligence, quote unquote, sees. But it's dead matter. It's just like the mirror sees. Right? But the point is the soul sees the mirror. Right? And so he's not directly seeing the sense object. He's seeing the mirror. The mirror is seeing the sense object. But it's still working by the potency of the soul itself. Right? So we, you know, who's that? Reflectionism. Whose was that?
Shankya.
So that's there, so we accept that. But the problem is the atheistic will stop at that. But the point is where does the power that the senses can work and that whole process is viable? That's coming from the Lord. That's the universal form. So when the Lord sees, everybody can see. When he hears, everyone can hear. So all the processes of seeing and hearing, you know, the kinds of ears, the kind of things that you can hear, all those, what ears can hear what, that's all arranged by the Lord. That's left out in the reflectionism.
Right.
You know, that's the weakness in it. Though, that part of it, the mechanics of it, we accept. But the point is they stop there, just like in Shankya up to Pradhan. We accept all that. But the point is they don't go past Pradhan. That's why then you have to get in, you have to use Vedanta to express there. So it just gives a nice technical thing. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the Shankya aspect of Vedanta, if you only take that part, it's called Shankya. Right? But if you're taking it along with everything else, we call it Vedanta. Does this make sense? Yes.
That's the same principle when you're discussing the Gita, we're talking karma and dhyana, and you said if you just take karma, it's called karma, but if you take it as part of bhakti, then it's...
Yeah, karma yoga. Yeah. And then, whether you still have those material attachments and stuff, then it's karma misra bhakti, you know? Karma misra bhakti yoga, you know? And then there's sakam karma yoga misra bhakti, and nishkam karma. Generally, nishkam means it's not misra anymore, but You know, so you just keep adding on to them. Really attached, Sakam Karma Yoga. Yeah, you got that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. We'll stop here. Just squeak. Yeah, so we'll stop here.
It's a calculated risk.
Oh, I see. Is that why you threw out the reflection? Looks like he's going to finish. Hey, what about you?
Ten more questions.
Okay. Yeah, but what? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nityananda Gaura Prema ki.